Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, that podcast focused on a zero emission future. Yes, it is. And we are joined by two, not one, but two wonderful individuals from the world of transport and electrification and data and insight and all of those wonderful things, starting with Stephen Clegg, and we've also got Richard Parker. So from Top Speed and Webfleet, respectively. Welcome, guys.
Thanks, hello. Paul.
Good afternoon.
Well, and we're going to have a very exciting time getting under the skin, particularly of a case study, because these guys are about getting the job done. So we're going to hear from Webfleet in just a moment. But Stephen, tell us your business, what you currently do, how long you've been doing it, and what your mission is, and then we can come on to see how Richard helps in that mission.
Crikey. Right. What our mission is. Okay, well, I'm the founder of Top Speed Couriers. I set the business up in 1985, and we've grown organically. We specialise really in the transporting dangerous goods, regulated, prohibited goods, specialist areas, logistics, not just A to B, but doing things a bit differently to provide a bit of value for money. What is our mission? To do difficult things. I think that's what our mission is, and do it successfully. What was the other question? Was that enough for the time being?
That's enough for the time being. And now we're going to come on to, because I was thinking, because your mission very much recently has been, moving your vehicles from emission vehicles, diesel, to zero emission vehicles. And you're doing that in an award-winning fashion. We'll come on to that later. But Richard, how are you helping Top Speed in this element of their mission, their transport element of their mission?
Well, obviously I work for Webfleet. We know, hopefully a lot of this audience will know Webfleet because we've been helping the EV Cafe now as sponsors for quite some time. So we go through that rigmarole. But I think what has been really nice, we've always talked, you guys and us in the past, about all these theories about we do this and that. And well, actually Top Speed have taken the stuff we do, both getting the data out at a central level and the team and the fleet manager level, but actually really working with the drivers as well and using the technology at the coalface with the drivers to help them actually achieve what Steve wants them to do as a business and, you know, move their goods around, you know, successfully. So I guess we'll get into maybe some of that later for it's drawn out in the case study. But yeah, it's one of those things that you start at one place and then you evolve and they've changed it and they've taken the going, okay, well, what about this? What about that? And that's why I wanted to bring them in, you know, into this podcast today, because it is when partnerships, and we always talk about collaboration, and collaboration can sometimes be around the people supplying in the ecosystem, but this is partnership customer to supplier, and it's really sort of been working really well.
Steve, I'm fascinated to understand what started you on the journey. What made you say running a perfectly good logistics business in the same old way that many, many others do? What made you say, I know I'm going to do the difficult things I already do differently?
And harder, I think, actually, yeah. When you do that. Well, we've always been a bit different, and I didn't realise this at the start, and I was only 21, but we ran our own vehicles and employed the drivers, and that business model for light transport is quite unusual. And so the organic growth was quite slow. Well, it was quite fast, actually, but it was slower than people who could take on subcontractors and just expand the business that way. But we could do things that required more control. And so we ended up working on government contracts, you know, winning government contracts. We started working on specialist areas, dangerous goods, radioactive material in the nuclear industry and things. And we struggled winning government tenders, even though we worked for these government departments, sort of just on a purchase order kind of system under the radar. And then it was the coalition government that revamped the government procurement service into Crown Commercial Services. And we
hold on a second. Hold on. Steve, you are Steve Clegg. You mentioned the coalition government, and one of the parties was Nick Clegg. No relation.
Yeah, no, go leave that. Stay away from that. No.
Just wondered.
Could be. No, not at all. No. And that would be interesting, wouldn't it? Crikey. So we started winning government tenders, government contracts, and did really well at it when previously SMEs couldn't get on to government frameworks. And then about 2021, one of the frameworks was renewed, and they said, "Oh, we want all suppliers on the frameworks to have a carbon reduction plan." And what is a carbon reduction plan? And PPN 0620 something or other anyway. So I thought, what is this? And then then that took me kind of to looking at other, I just went on like, I don't know, big companies' websites, look at their sustainability objectives or their policies. And you think, 50 pages and I don't understand any of this. And I looked at what the government wanted and I looked at this, what is this carbon reduction plan? What does it want? It wants you to reduce your carbon. And then we worked out actually, it was really just like an accountancy package, but accounting for your carbon instead of the pounds on plants. I realized actually, as we worked on more tenders, that there's a lot of flannel going on in the business where people were saying they were going to do things. And if you mention, you know, nobody mentioned net zero. And if it went to 50 pages, somebody's sustainability plan, you know, well, that's gumph and nonsense. And they never once mentioned net zero, but they mentioned carbon neutral and green. Green was, you know, green would be, and things about volcanoes and glaciers and and rainforests in Malaysia or somewhere. And you think, what has this got to do? And actually, we tried all different things. Like, you know, we moved offices into a huge warehouse. We were very fortunate, but we took a gamble. But we did things, and we did a lot of work during the pandemic, during lockdown, moving samples around the Department for Health and Social Care. And we spent our money wisely, and we did things like replace all the fluorescents with LEDs, like 200 of them, and put a new roof on it that was insulated, and put air conditioning on. And then we were accounting for our carbon using an engine, the carbon accounting engine, and nothing happened. Nothing happened to reduce the car. And I'm doing all these things. You know, people say that you should switch off your VCR, you know, come on, honestly, your computer off at the plug socket and stop that little light blinking because it uses electricity. Doesn't make an ounce of difference to our carbon emissions. So then we started buying. I thought, well, we need to do something because we need to stay ahead of the game and beat the competitors at this. So we started buying electric vans, and that was really, you know, and just like when you bought your computer in the 1990s, when you looked at this blank screen, I thought, you know, it's just easy to write it all down. You know, it's good for playing Tetris. Tetris or something, you leave it there for a couple of weeks. And you buy a stupid book that says Windows for Idiots. And you think, well, I must be, you know. And so we looked at these two electric vans, and they sat there for a few weeks and people took them out and it was just a bit of a gimmick. And we decided we really need to get on with this. And then we, you know, teamed up with Mercedes, who we've always bought Mercedes vans. Mercedes-Benz are the best vans on the road for us. And, you know, we service our own vehicles. So we started looking at how can we do this properly, but it took a long time. And we started in 2022 and £4.5 million later, or maybe £4.2 million now, you know, we've got this huge fleet of electric vans. But you can't just buy an electric van. Anybody who's driven an electric vehicle knows you can't just buy it and just hand the keys to somebody to go out and drive it. Otherwise, it just won't work, you know. You've got to train people up and encourage them and bring people with you and keep talking to them and encouraging them and working through it. And that's, you know, not in a nutshell. That's how we are. That's where we got to today with it. But it takes a load of things to work together to make it all happen. So, and sorry, just to tell you one thing. You know, the most amazing thing about trying to reduce your carbon emissions, and people say, oh, it can't be done. And we've heard that it can't be done. You've moved too quickly. There's a balance between emissions and sustainability and profitability. Heard it all from people who should know better. Honestly, we've lost work because people say, oh, no, we're not using it. And, you know, the one is people say, oh, we'll do it later. We'll get there in the end when the technology has come down in price and stuff. What happens when you start trying to account for your emissions? When you do it properly and account for all your carbon emissions, and then you start decarbonizing your fleet, the carbon emissions go up. So you get rid of a load of diesel vans off down the road. And the next thing is, they say, well, where did they go to? Who took them away? What's going to happen to those vans? Where do you get your new ones from? Oh, you got them from Frankfurt, did you? Well, that's a lot of mileage, isn't it? And all the your carbon emissions go up, even though you're decarbonizing. So it's not going to be, it's not an easy journey, because you just know it's going to create everything you do. Well, everything you do creates carbon, doesn't it? So it creates some emission that needs to be accounted for. So we've seen all the flannel, and actually that's how difficult it was for us, really.
Mm. And
it still is, I think, really, you know.
Yeah, and what we're hearing here, Stephen, is something that I guess a lot of people don't recognise, and that's that science-based approach that you've taken, science-based targets. And it's clear that you're doing this properly. But I'm hearing also, and I'd like you to sort of talk into that science-based targets bit, but also just thinking about, you did this for commercial benefit. That's what I'm hearing. And a lot of people are going, oh, I'm not going to go green because, you know, it's going to cost me a fortune and there's no return in it. Talk to us a little bit about science-based targets and the return on investment or in reduction of costs and also benefit in business terms.
I think the science-based target, it was just a feature of what we'd done that had everything checked, really. The carbon reduction plan is this SBTI. Was a really nice rubber stamp to have to say this we verified this. Doing it using a carbon reduction plan to present the facts helps you work out where you need to go, where you've come from, where you need to go to. I mean, I think Ed Miliband once said, apologies to him if you didn't say it, but somebody said once, oh, you'll save money reducing your carbon emissions. Well, that's a bit like saying, I don't know, you know, like that's a huge leap. That's like saying we're going to build a rocket and we're going to go to the moon in 10 years' time or something. You know, there's a load of work to do in between time. It is just spending some money on electric vehicles is going to cost you money to begin with. And, you know, anything that's a bit innovative, doing it ahead of the game, you do it wrong, you keep doing it, and eventually at some point think, it's beginning to look like it might just pay some dividends. And I think that's what happens, is you keep going and doing it and doing it. You fail, think again, have another bash, keep going. You know, and I think, yes, it will pay dividends, or it is beginning to pay dividends, because somebody, you know, went and messed it all up in the Middle East, didn't they? So, you know, our diesel, we don't spend much on diesel anymore at all. We're now attracting massive reductions, massive discounts from the public charging network because of our intensity. We're charging vans up 2, 3, 4 times a day, and that's remarkable. And all of a sudden, it's looking really, the figures are looking good, but it's taken, 4 years, something like that, to get it kind of about right, I think.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europcarma. Search Europcar Business.
Steve, I'm fascinated to understand how Webfleet have helped you on that journey, because when you speak, you speak as somebody who's pretty quick on the uptake. You don't take any flannel, and I get the sense that you're pretty switched on yourself. You reached out to Webfleet because potentially, I guess, you had a challenge, an issue, or you needed something doing for you. How did they support you in your initial phases of the journey?
Well, we've had vehicle tracking for about 23 years, I think, some early 2003, maybe, we've started vehicle tracking. And, you know, that was before anybody else had it. One or two companies had it. People had also, there was some odd solutions, proper vehicle-based tracking equipment fixed in the vehicle, opened up a can of worms, you know, health and safety issues, road safety. And the early versions were quite good. But actually what it was a conversation with one of Webfleet's agents that came to see us about mobile phones, actually. And he was trying to talk to us about mobile phone technology and stuff and our mobile account. And I was more interested in Webfleet. You know, I wanted to know more about this because it seemed like what he had was a better solution than we had previously. And it was, you know, it was a fantastically stable solution for us. It trounced all the competition that was out there at the time, and having access to data, real time or historical, with tracking. I mean, I don't use Webfleet at all. Yeah, I go on it sometimes if I need to check on something. But our ops team, administration, fleet maintenance, you rely on it. You know, it's a fantastic tool. And the technology that came with it, with the road safety, AI-based, you know, warning systems for the drivers to help them drive safely, and the maintenance side of it, and all the little features that you get with Webfleet, you know, I don't think we couldn't operate it without it. We couldn't run an electric fleet without having that sort of thing between us, that infrastructure between us and the vehicle that's out, you know, 200 or 300 miles away.
Yeah. What's the biggest thing you've learned from your time with Webfleet and the data that it can provide? Because, yeah, data's fine, but it's the insights that you get from that data that really matter.
Drive slower. That's what I've learned.
Yeah, we've heard that before. Safety.
Yeah, safety. Driving fast is great, isn't it? Raises the heart rate, makes you feel fantastic, and gets, you know, you're beating the next guy in the other car and stuff. And people do it on the motorways and stuff, but actually you drive at say, some people drive well over 70 on the motorway, don't they? You see them going past and stuff. But if unless you're going to drive at night on a clear motorway, you're going to end up at some point at a traffic jam or slower traffic or speed restricted areas and stuff. So you just drive at a pace and, you know, you get to the destination and you probably, if you drive like a madman and get there all het up, the time you say takes is the same time it takes to make and possibly drink a cup of tea. And and it is the hare and the tortoise thing. If you drive slower, you get there better, quicker, get the job done. The van's not being, you know, your equipment, you're not wrecking the equipment. Truly, you are not wrecking the equipment. That's the one big feature. You're not having accidents. You're reducing your insurance premiums. You're not wasting time. And you're saving masses amounts. If you're still running diesel, masses amounts of diesel by just simply driving 15 miles an hour slower and being a bit more, you know, drivers think, everyone thinks they're a great driver, but actually with the technology you get from, say, Webfleet, when it can tell you what your risk, your score is, your opti drive and things like that, and drivers can see it, and then you give them a bonus based on getting that score and doing other things. Wow. You know, when we first started tracking, vehicle tracking, you know, we had Vauxhall Astra hatchback cars and stuff, which were phenomenally, they were diesel 2002. They were very economical and they went like the wind and they were driven. But we switched to tracking because they were being driven but like the wind. And no amount of telling people changed it until you introduced a bonus scheme. And, you know, we've worked on that over time. And it's not just a bonus scheme. You've got to encourage people. You've got to coach them. You can have arguments when they don't get it, you know, and eventually it gets ingrained in everybody. If I do it like this, I'll get my bonus. And actually, the electric vehicles just make life just so much better because everyone's, you know, it's like the Webfleet technology. The vans are so far advanced over diesel vans and people just have a nice relaxed drive and a day's work is a much easier time behind the desk, really.
And this was clear as I was reading through the case study that we did. I mean, I'm a van man at heart. That's my world. I love seeing this kind of story come to life and be brought to life. And there was a number of things that I always advocate and talk about, but lovely to see the proof in the pudding that your drivers are reporting like less stressful life. You know, they're stopping sort of little and often, and it means that they're better employees. Your retention rate seems to have gone up and so on like that. Talk to us a little bit about that element of it.
Well, every van driver in the world, whatever qualifications they got for training for other things, their one remit, isn't it? Built into them is to get from A to B. I've got to pick this thing up here and it has to get here. And, you know, then they might get other work on the way and stuff. And so you get a schedule in the head of what they've got to do. And that is the goal. I have to get to that point by, you know, the end of the day is going to end here. And that's all I've got to do. So you know, rest breaks, no matter what you say, no matter what rules you set up, rest breaks go out the window. Oh, I'll do this later. I'll do that. And I've done it myself. You know, when I used to drive in the 80s, I just got there and got straight back again. No, I'm not stopping at service areas beyond, I'm just not doing it just to get back in a quicker time. And then you get back home. You know, I lived on a farm. I think, well, what do I do now? You know, got back home early. But actually, so when you start coaching people to take an easier, you know, actually you're not just going from A to B, you're doing something more, far more important for us, and you don't need to drive fast. And the electric vehicle brings in that idea, well, I'm going to have to stop sometime. So I might as well stop at lunchtime and have a break, you know, and plugging your van into the wall socket or whatever it is, you know, and walking off to get a sandwich is a whole different experience than sat there with a nozzle pouring this smelly liquid through a hole in the wall of the van. I mean, can you believe it? It's almost as ridiculous as those Smash adverts from the 1970s, you know, do you remember the Smash advert where those aliens are standing in there and they're going, do you know what they do? And they get something called the potato peeler, and they're all, you know, like zippy, they're laughing and they're like rolling around. Yeah. You think, if somebody looked down, you think, do you know how crazy these people are? They extract this stuff out of the ground, this gooey stuff that's been there for millions of years. They transport it somewhere, they unload it, do something else with it, put it in this big vat, boil stuff off, come up with all this other goo, and put this little liquid in a tank, take it somewhere else, put it in the ground. Somebody comes along and then sticks it in the side of the car. You know, I mean, please tell me what is sustainable about diesel and petrol. You know, people say, well, what, how can you run electric vehicles? Well, actually, how can you run a diesel? How can you do it? And then you've got AdBlue. What is that?
Oh,
you've got
this
other goo that you stick in. And if you spill it down the wing of your car, you get this white sort of crystallization. You think it's back to my chemistry when you drew that stuff in the lab and everything was, God, please, you know.
Oh,
just
Paul,
to me, we, just...
We've got to do a video, my friend, haven't we? We've got to do the Smash advert, but for petrol and diesel. Brilliant.
Indeed. It is a crazy world.
It is a crazy world. And people said things like, you know, fueled vans. Now I'm hearing this. We prefer a fueled van, please, because they'll get there quicker. And in the 80s and 90s, people say, I want a motorbike because I know they'll get there quicker. You know, don't be daft. I want fuel van. You know, but you kind of think. And then I heard somebody saying, it's a really fantastic idea about, carbon based fuels or something like that. Somebody said, anything that's produced out of, well, anything that's refined is going to cost a lot of money. What a fantastic! Do you still run on refined fuel? Do you? You know, you've had to send electricity. You just hope that somebody at size world B is keeping those generators going. So when I go and charge my van up, I just get this power that's just been generated 250 miles away, goes straight into my car. You know, but actually, to get diesel in the tank, what process has to go through? It has to go through to get that fuel from the ground into the back of your car, and then you're lugging around 100 kilos of fuel, 80, I don't know what it is, but people love doing it, don't they? You know, people like doing it because I like this. And actually, you know, it's a nice thing to have. You know, it's like having your Bewley Motor Museum or the down from near where we live in Wiltshire, the Hayes Motor Museum is down the road. You know,
it's nice fabulous.
To have this. I haven't been to it actually, but you can't. And the naval museum is a fleet area on museum. But you know, one day people will look at these diesel engines like when you go to the traction engine rallies as a kid, you see all these little engines of bells and whistles on them and stuff. They'll be saying, oh yeah, do you have the AdBlue version as well? Yeah, I found it in scrapyard. You know, I'm after the little plastic cap on the AdBlue. I realised, you know, if I get one from 2025, I believe it's a collectible item. You know, I've searched high and low for that. I've been digging up scrapyards and stuff for this little, you know, and it'll be like that. you know, I'm not going to sell you something. Anyway, go on. Sorry.
Anyway, indeed. And I know fine well, I spilt AdBlue in the boot of my car once before I knew. So I pulled it out and thought, oh dear, never mind. And sort of pulled it out and thought, shut the boot, and went back a few hours later and literally had a crystal mountain in the boot. It was just like growing everywhere.
Terrible.
Anyway, the good reasons to going electric. But we just, for those of you that are watching, you will have noticed that Richard Parker from Webfleet has dropped off. Technical difficulties and other, you know, firewall possibly, or who knows, but he's struggling to get back in and so didn't want to re-interrupt. And I think, Stephen, he's listening and hearing what a wonderful job you're doing of speaking positively about Webfleet. But question I've got, because what I was excited to see is, I've talked about the case study a little bit and, you know, all of the various different benefits that you got now, having been through 4 years and 4 million quid investing in this new future. You've got a King's Award. The King has acknowledged your business for sustainability and of one of just 185 companies across the country. I mean, that must have been a very, very proud moment and a sort of a well done on the investment and the time.
Yeah, it's really difficult to put it into context at the moment because it's only just been announced. But what I can say, actually, it was no work on my part for that. It was the people back at Totspeed who did the work on that. We did do some work and I've written a lot of words because we do it for tenders, write bids and stuff about what we do. And we'd won the High Sheriff's Awards for Cheshire, I think, for something sustainability last year, the year before. And they said, why didn't you come to this workshop for King's Award? So we sent some of the senior managers on that. Who had no experience about it. And then when he came back, so this is what I need to work on. Myself and Julian, our managing director, kind of pointed him in the right direction, that this is where some information is. This is some good things we've written. Here are our policies and our quality management systems. This is what we do. The workshop manager was involved in it, the operations manager and the business manager, and they worked on it. So really, it's credit to them because they worked and worked and worked on it, and significant achievement. And when you tell somebody, some people go, oh, okay, right. And one or two people say, ooh, there's not a lot of people who realize how important, what significant achievement that is. And that, when it drives it home to you, when somebody else says that to you, and that, you know, every day it's getting a bit more crystallized, just like your AdBlue in the boot of your car, as to how, what that is when you speak to people. And you know, we got the logo, we can use the logo, we can have a flag, King's Award with that logo, we can have a flag, we can put it on all our logo letterheads and stuff, from the, you know, significant. And actually it's just it's a nice big pat on the back for the people who work really hard. And you know, it's easy to say, oh, it's just a difficult journey over the years, but there have been times over the 4 years, 5 years, when at least one of us has had their head in hands, going, "This is not working." And somebody else says, "What did we say again? We're not going to do that. Or we need to buy some diesel vans because we need this job." And people in the ops team have said, "Oh, can we have that diesel van for this job?" No, let's work out how to do it with an electric van, because if we don't learn, we won't know. And actually, I think what it's come down to, sorry, I don't want to talk too much. About a couple of weeks ago, we had not a customer complain, but very specialist work that was regulated, you know, collecting samples that we do regularly from one point near the South Coast and bringing them up to Cheshire, up to laboratory. And we do it quite regularly. And the complaint came in, customer's not very happy because the samples aren't reaching our lab in time. And they're wondering, you know, if you've got more fuel vans, they can put deploy on this service provision, because obviously clearly it's the electric vans that are causing the issue. Oh, okay, fair enough. Ran the report off Webfleet, and for the 5-6 journeys that had done that job, the vehicles that had done that job, and you know, long distance, and there was six. I think it was six jobs. Five of them were in electric vans. One was in a fueled van that runs on refined whatever it is, with a bit of AdBlue. And all the jobs reached the laboratory the same day within the, you know, nobody had to wait behind, nobody had to do anything special. One job made it the next morning, and that was an electric van job. But that's because the M5 was shut for about 3 hours. So they were never going to make it, whatever it was in. And it wasn't a factor. It wasn't the fact it was an electric van wasn't the problem. And if, in fact, the van that made it to the lab quickest was a diesel van, and it made it to the lab in about an hour and a half quicker than the other vans. But the driver didn't stop for his break at lunchtime. So, you know, and that, so 45 minutes maybe, you know, and the driver would have been allowed to drive at 70, and the electric vehicle driver would have been driven at 65. So what is there really an issue there? And we haven't heard back from the customer, and it wasn't a complaint. It was just a, can you just investigate this and tell us what the thing is? But the assumption was your electric vans are causing a problem for us. And it was Webfleet, actually. We got the data off Webfleet and presented it to them. And that was it. You know, case closed, really. So
I'm interested in charging, Stephen, how you charge your vehicles. So do you have a predominance of depot charging, or is it out in the retail world and on the roads that you're charging? How do you do that? Depot, a home mix?
We've got a few drivers with some home chargers where they can get those installed. We've got a home charger here. We've got several chargers at our Winsford hub and two hyperchargers. Most of the time it's out on the road. So, you know, using the, we've got about four accounts with public charging network. It's just a question of education of drivers, but it seems to be that the drivers are finding these special charge points that nobody else uses just around the corner from where they live. You know, everyone's got their pet charge point, it's finding one sometimes that's free. Sometimes they have problems with that, I guess. Sometimes they don't work. Some problem with the interface. It's a bit early days, isn't it, for them? Sometimes I find it frustrating. You'd go to charge up at a motorway service center, and I very rarely do because I always make it up a journey so I can get somewhere where there's my own hypercharger. And you think, what, I got onto a free bay, and you plug in and you go, oh, yeah, it's not working on my app. Oh, hang on, have I done it the right way? Because everyone seems, the chargers have different ways of doing it. Is it the app that's working? Oh, get the card out. Am I doing it the right way? And you look around and you think, hang on a minute. This particular bay isn't working, is it? And everyone's looking at you thinking, sucker.
Been there.
You've all done it. So, but that's not the problem with the car. That's just, or the van. That's just the charging network's not quite aligned, is it, for everybody? But that, you know, and if I was charging every day out on the road, I'd find my own private charger that I'd be using all the time. And even if I took a little detour, I'd use that one. But I don't have any issues with that, really. But it's getting better and better.
So the vehicles are good. The charging, you're making work. I'm wondering what customers think. You know, we know the king likes what you're doing, but what do your customers think about how your business has transitioned?
I think... Well, the vans look smart and they're nicely presented and they drive slowed at the motorway so more people see them, which is nice, I think. Customers, I think a lot of them appreciate what we're doing, and especially on the contracts when we, you know, public sector contracts, government contracts, stuff, when we report in that we've got, you know, the electric vehicle mileage and the carbon reduction, I think that's really well received because it's getting to the point where everybody's got to report emissions and somebody wants those emissions for themselves, don't they? You know, scope three emissions. Oh, can I have your emissions? I'll put it on my carbon reduction plan. I'll report up the chain. And it is happening. It is happening that eventually the buyers will be saying, price is one thing and quality, but actually we want to see those carbon emissions. So get with it. So it is well received. And I just think it's a nice thing to pull up at a customer's loading bay or something in an electric vehicle because it's different. You know, and everything's just different about electric van. It just puts a smile on your face, the way it locks, the way you can set off without having to, you know, I walk past back of one of the businesses near us, and I, be careful, and two vans pulled up, and they must have been multi-drop delivery drivers. They were both unbranded vans. One guy at least locked his van and walked in with the package. The other guy left his driver's door open, the engine running, and the back door's open, and he walked in. You know, because why did he do that? Because it's just a pain to have to crank the engine over and do this thing, you know. But if you've been an electric van, I think, you know, what do you do? I think you just undo your seatbelt and walk, step out, you know, do something. And it goes, oh, okay, you don't want to be in it anymore. And they lock as you walk away, I think, you know. It just takes a whole load of processes out of it.
This, I think, this is the unexplored benefit, because what you know, you talk, you know, about that particular client wanting the delivery at a certain time. But I think if I've got this right, you guys are really focused on same day delivery or within 24 hours, certainly, and you've got a really really high compliance rate of meeting those targets that you set out with your customers, which is fabulous. And I wonder, you know, with being electric, obviously the maintenance is much lower typically. Has that proven true for you guys? And have you seen reductions in the costs of your maintenance over the time? But of course, if there has been a reduction in cost, there's a reduction in time off the road. And time off the road in diesel vehicles because of DPFs or, you know, other issues with the thousands of moving parts that's in the diesel vehicle means that actually you're a vehicle down. You're maybe 1 or 2% down on your ability to serve your customers every day because of maintenance or service issues and things like that. Talk to us about how that's helped.
Well, so the first thing is we were traditionally a same-day courier company, but now probably about 90% of the work is overnight. So we pick things up one day and do something else with it, and then it goes out the next day. It's more process an event critical than time critical. You know, something has to happen, not necessarily today, but tomorrow, or this sample has only got, will only be sustainable for a certain amount of time. And the customer likes that because they get a nice, you know, if the cost is better, it's more cost effective. They're not paying for cheap overnight that might not arrive, but they're not paying huge amounts of same day just to get the certainty. So and that's our business, you know, model fits with that, because you can then develop a hand-to-hand service. You've got the technology, you've got trained people, everything's hand-to-hand, and you've got the technology in the vans with cameras and stuff, so you can truly, you can do barcode scanning, but actually seeing something in the back of a van and then seeing it in the warehouse, you know that it's going to, you know, it's A to B to C, or A to something, then to B. You know, something happens in the middle, and that's what we're really good at. But so the vehicles do come, a lot of the vehicles, half the vehicles come back to us at some point over 24 hours. But the maintenance is just dropped off the cliff. It's about a quarter of what it used to be, because we're not running diesel vans anymore. And the mechanics, you know, we've got a really good workshop. We've been honing vehicle maintenance for 40 years. You know, we used to, honestly, petrol engines and stuff like that. But we've had mechanics, really good mechanics, for 20 odd years. And it's only more recently where we managed to, you know, and we would have a workshop and ramps and stuff. But when we started moving away from diesel engines, from diesel, and got electric, life became so much easier, because there weren't, you know, you get down to the workshop, and once, you know, we had this floor line, the warehouse and the workshop, with this super epoxy resin, very expensive, shiny floor. And you go down, you see sooty, redundant parts spread all over it because they're ripping a van apart. Because, like, is a DPF or, you know, catalytic, whatever, something's gone wrong, and there's water pumps and, you know, suspension legs and things flying all over the place, and a skip outside full of scrap metal. And they were costing a fortune, you know, so much money every month. And now you get down to the workshop and you speak to the lads, the workshop manager and the mechanics, how's everything going? Yeah, fine, got a couple of services coming in. Got this, that, and the other. We're going to be, and all of a sudden, everything's getting more attention because they got more time, and we're not throwing parts in the skip and replacing things. Things just get checked, monitored. You know, the driver's doing walk around checks, reporting stuff in, and it's so much easier to maintain. Honestly, you know, yes, you said the vans are great for, they're not, the range isn't quite there. You know, the length of charging is an issue. You have to spend, you know, drivers have to spend time charging up. But the other side of it, we're not buying diesel that's expensive. That's a luxury these days. We're not buying huge amounts of parts, AdBlue, you know, components that wear out, what, alternators, starter motors. All we're replacing is tires and checking brakes and stuff. And because the vans are being driven slower and the drivers getting more rest, the vans aren't getting damaged quite the same. They're not wearing out, they're not getting damaged and stuff, and we're not impacting on the environment and other road users as well. So there's so many benefits about running an electric vehicle that, you know, that are hidden. Otherwise, if you were just running a fleet of leased vehicles with, you know, and weren't managing it really, you'd never see all those things because it all gets lost, doesn't it?
I like that. And I like the fact that because, you know, I think we talk a lot about sort of a certain amount of savings, 60, maybe 50, maybe 40% savings. It feels like when you truly own it, and when you manage it yourself and you're not being managed by a third party that might have events, might everybody have a vested interest in spending a little bit more money on that vehicle, it seems that you can really reduce that time, doesn't it?
When you see monthly management information, you look down the lines and you see the figures, but actually it's the percentages and you think, oh, that is really nice. So I know how much, I know I've been there, you know, cost of wages is a lot, you know, so actually paying drivers to sit and charge up, we think would be a huge cost to you. But actually cost of maintenance, cost of diesel, cost of all the ancillaries around it, cost of motor claims, vehicle insurance, downtime and stuff. All those hidden extras are a little extra percentage points on your gross profit, off your gross profit. And boy, you know, yeah, it's taken a long time. But when you look at it now, you think, oh, okay, fine. That's nice, isn't it? That is, that's low. And I can just see, you know, my competitors must be looking at the cost of fuel. And you see people, oh, is there, I'm getting emails. I saw an email the other day. Can you tell me if there's a fuel surcharge on this job you quoted for? It wasn't a contract. It was just somebody we use quite, is there a fuel surcharge? And you think, what do you mean fuel surcharge? Do people still do that? You know, how very quaint, you know, oh, you see, yes. And they're all, you know, but everyone's putting a fuel surcharge on. You think, you're not going to ask me how much MF main less from my electric these days and am I getting a rebate? Because that's kind of what we're up to. Do I get a rebate? Because your electric vans are costing a lot less. You know, and actually, there's a whole load of different things, but you have to set your system up and manage it and really be hands-on. And that's where the vehicle tracking comes in because, you know, you see these vans passing on the motorway doing well over 70 miles an hour, branded vans, and you think, are they not tracked? What would they do? What would they do if they tracked it? Think how much they'd save if they could get that driver to drive a bit slower. And you think, oh, you know what? I bet they don't want to do it. Everything. Hang on, yeah. If we track it, and then we know, and we've got to have somebody sat at a screen managing it all. And think of the things we'd have to do. And then, you know, if there was a serious incident and somebody got hurt, questions would be asked: is, well, you knew this driver was a risk, so but you did nothing to manage it, and there'd be notes on the system. Can we get this person to slow down? Can we get some more driver training, coaching, whatever? And you think, oh, you know, switch it off. Let's not go. The insurance, you know, the board of directors sort the insurance out with the agents, and you know, it's always £500,000 or whatever it is. The fuel, well, we get discounts off the you know, fuel card people, and that's just a fixed fee. And the maintenance, you know, it's on a lease, so it doesn't matter. And we, you know, the vans are thrown away at the end of 3 years because we, you know, there's nothing, there's no residual on them because we've smashed them up, you know. And but all these things, if you can manage it, and it actually comes from, you know, I'm a salesman for Webfleet. You need vehicle tracking.
Well, know, so I'm going to, Stephen, yeah. I'm going to help you here because, I mean, you've clearly grasped the nettle of managing yeah. your drivers well and managing the daily operations through the Webfleet portal and the telematics device. But I know you've also added cameras and you've seen a sort of corresponding reduction in accidents, but also ability to meet the sort of to do deep dives on near misses and things like that. Just talk to us about how Webfleet have really helped with the camera introduction as well and how they're surfacing that to help you make quality decisions with your drivers.
So the camera technology is, that was, we used to have cameras from about 13 years ago, and they weren't linked to the system, to Webfleet. And I think Webfleet had that solution at the time. And we had these forward-facing cameras. And for whatever reason, you know, they were very good, but unless you really kept onto them and kept checking them, the cameras stopped working and you didn't know they weren't recording. So therefore, when you had a bad accident, you need to investigate it. There's no data. And you were selling, setting your stall out to your underwriter saying, this is what we're doing, got tracking, we managed the van drivers like this, that and the other. And then they say, well, where's the camera for this one claim that's going on where we can't defend it? Don't know, and it's not working. And we went through different form, you know, the system got upgraded time over time. And still the cameras would come to the point where they stopped blinking working. And then it was Julian, our MD, who said, we've got Webfleet now got this solution, and it's linked through Webfleet, completely integrated, kind of forward facing, driver facing, load area cameras, and it's AI based. So we're not, you know, and we had to do a load of GDPR, load of consultation, you know, and Sarah, my wife, who's one of the other directors, we all got involved to make sure we were doing the right thing by the drivers, that we weren't snooping on them, that we're going to help you. don't want you to have an accident. And this, the Webfleet solution seemed to be the best fit because it understood that we're focusing on the driver. And we're going to tell the driver, look, you're doing something a bit, you know, not safe here. We're not going to just report back to the base that, you know, we're constant recording and stuff. And actually, it was a hard sell to everybody. They thought, again, it's spying the cab. But we said, no, it's road safety. It's driver safety. We're focusing on driver safety. We need to reduce claims and reduce accidents and reduce injury. And in the first year we did it, we hadn't even done all the vans. We reduced the claims by 75%. A mass, wow, honestly, wow. Unbelievable volume. You know, just fell off a cliff. When we thought, and the problem was, if we weren't going to do something, because of what we do and where we go and the type of service we provide, that we're not just a regular courier, there's only a few. You know, the insurance market to us is much more narrowed because the amount of risk and what, you know, the types of things we do. So we had to, you know, we really want to engage with our underwriters, insurers, claims handlers and stuff to do the most we can to you know, reduce the effects of, you know, accidents and things. And we thought, Steve, we were heading. Yeah, sorry.
There's an elephant in the room, my friend. And the elephant in the room is that you're keeping your drivers safer by reducing speeds on the roads. The name of your company is Top Speed. Do you have a branding exercise that you need to do?
What? Can you switch him off? Can you get rid of him? It's like a bloody nuisance, isn't it?
You're going slower to go faster. That's what I would say. Going slower to go faster.
He's good, you know.
You know, the thing, I like that Top Speed. I came up with that, obviously, when I set my business up, and I thought, somebody else must have thought of this name, and nobody had thought of it. And for years, I thought, you know, somebody's going to come up with that same name. And we didn't do, you know, now it's a registered trademark and stuff. But what really gave it, what really I used to love is, and people still do, we'd ring you up and say, oh, I want, hi, it's such a body here from such a place, whatever. I need a Top Speed courier, please. And you think, that's my company. You've just, you know, as opposed to just, I just need a courier. I need a Top Speed courier. And you think, oh, okay, I'm a cut above, aren't I, really? You want to, and they, you know, people say, oh, your drivers are really friendly and helpful and why I went the extra mile. But yeah, it is with Top Speed, but we go slowly to get there quicker, I think is what you're saying, isn't it? But
that's great. It works for me.
Yeah, fine.
Now, Stephen, we have a closing session. It's been a tremendous conversation, and I'm loving hearing how your business has grown and developed, and really grasped the nettle of sustainability, and you know, the partnership with Webfleet that really has come to life, and we'll perhaps summarise that in a minute. But we have one special thing. You can't use it for rebranding. If you need to do rebranding, you have to go to John, and he'll help you. But if we have a closing tradition, and I'm away from home, normally you wouldn't have a sort of 70s background with associated florals. You would have had it in my office. I'm also in wheelchair as we speak, funnily enough.
All right, well done.
Yes, there we go.
What an amazing county. Yeah.
I know, it is. It's beautiful. I grew up here and, we've been walking around it many years. But anyway, we have a very special tradition at the end of our podcast. It's the Evie Cafe Magic Wand. Now, I don't have said magic wand with me because it's in the office at home and I have a terrible memory. But we do have something equally as magic, and that is the Evie Cafe selfie stick. Now, you won't know, but that's how I've built my career for whatever it is on the back of a selfie stick. But I'm going to pass you the magic wand. So here it comes, and you are able to take that.
Yep, got that. Get something. See, oh, it's dropped on the floor. Yeah, okay, I've got that. What
best place for it.
keep it away from the dog.
Right.
I want my selfie stick back in one piece. Anyway, so if you had a wish, Stephen, and you're only allowed one, if you had a wish, what would you use that wish for?
Not come on podcasts. I think that'd be the best. where they ask you damn fool questions at the end.
Harsh.
Fair.
Yeah.
If I had a magic wand, what would I don't know really? What would I? I want my Volvo EV90 back tomorrow. Now, my Volvo EX90, sorry. It went off to Volvo because it broke on me. That's what I would do. I want, please, can I have my EX90, whatever it is, Volvo, which I've only had for less than a year, which is the most fantastic car when it works. And actually, I had a Discovery, which I bought from brand new, which is 9 years old. And I didn't sell it because I always looked after it. Mechanics always done a fantastic job. Jailer, perhaps not so, but it is a nice car. Never let me down. But I did once and they were really good at getting me started again. And the Volvo stopped working one morning and it went away looking very sad on the back of a truck. Went off to some garage somewhere and it needs an inverter, which is lots of money, and fortunately I'm not paying for it, and it's taken weeks to get. So I thought, no problem, I'll get my Land Rover Discovery out and I'll make an issue with Volvo about saying it's a shame that JLR have to support Volvo cars with their flagship vehicle with on the windscreen it says Volvo for life or something. Well, you know, not quite. And so I've done about 1,200 miles in my Discovery because I got it. It was all on a sawn. I thought, I can't sell it. You know, it's worth bobbins, really. And I do like it. And I got it out, got it taxed, been using it. So I'm going to drive this like my electric Volvo. And it had all the safety features that we knew at the time. It was a top, you know, it was an HSE, really nice car, a Discovery 5, whatever it is. And boy, is it the hardest car to drive. What a lumbering piece of... It wants going down, so I might drop it off at Bewley or wherever, at Haynes Museum. Lovely car. Boy, I've done 1,200 miles. And I used to drive that, you know, and think, well, it's a bit of a gas guzzle. I'll just suck that up. And it was doing 32 miles a gallon or something. On a good day, get 35 miles a gallon. I have been driving it so, so carefully. Like, you know, just really carefully. And I've done a lot of mileage in it in the last 4 weeks or something. And I'm getting 40 point something miles to gallon out of it, which must be unheard of. But boy, is that the hardest thing to do, really. And, you know, the other thing is, on the Volvo, I can play apps and podcasts and stuff. Funny enough, I'll probably listen to myself one day.
I won't do that.
And it steers itself, so you just have to have your hand on the steering wheel, and it tells you, and it's got cameras and LiDAR and radar and all sorts of things, whatever. My discovery, I'm driving along thinking, I can't keep it in a straight line when I'm looking at the screen here to select something on sound. Really, honestly, they think I'm driving around in 12-year tech, 15-year-old technology whenever that was designed. And I thought that car was fantastic, but I cannot wait for my Volvo because of the safety features on it. And the same thing with the V2 van, the Mercedes Sprinter, the buses and stuff. Things do move on and... you need that latest technology, the safety aids, you need everything at your disposal to stay safe on the road, don't you? So actually, coming back to the Webfleet thing, everything, and we are doing it for driver safety because we get the benefit out of it as the drivers do. But yeah, if I could get, what did you do with that one anyway? But they have apparently the Volvo, they needed a new inverter.
I've got it back.
Magic wrestled it from the dog.
Well, it doesn't work because my Volvo's not arrived, has it? So it's a complete.
You've given away the game. Oh,
it's
no.
Absolutely. It's the worst. It's the worst magic wand. It's like, but
it's been Tommy told that Cooper, before.
Tommy Cooper's magic wand. So that's all. I'm just saying is that that I thought I had the best car on the road. But I got the best car. I want my Volvo back. And actually, I would imagine any driver now, if we said, "Oh, take the diesel van on that job," he'd come back and say, "Well, what is this? It's a bucket. This is a right old bucket. Where's my electric van? Because the decibels, vibration, filling it up, and noise and that thing. That's anyway."
A perfect way to end. John, this has been such fun, hasn't it? But also a beautiful collaboration between customer and supplier. Just fabulous stuff.
For me, this speaks the loudest of any of the podcasts that we've done. And the reason for that is that usually we have people representing their businesses and they're trying to sell something. They're trying to sell some technology. They're trying to sell a great vehicle or some software or something. What Steve does is he's taken a business that really did need to do this, but he was one of the first to do it. And you speak so eloquently and passionately about making a change happen through Webfleet and supported by Webfleet. We're all paid to say they're great. Webfleet guys, they are great. We've seen their work, but to have a customer say it so well speaks volumes and is worth so much more than you can imagine. Well done for what you've done. And thank you so much for being here because you are not only a brilliant business person, but you're bloody funny as well.
Sorry. Hilarious. I might be funny. I'm not even that funny, but I don't have a magic wand, do I? That's a selfie stick. I can't be that
You don't
funny.
Need it. You don't need it.
The thing is, I'm not a brilliant business person. I've got people at Topspin who do a far better job than I did when I was doing those roles. Honestly, do you know what I mean? Don't they get me out of the office? So I'll just come in and talk to you for an hour because they want to get rid of me.
Yeah, because they're
doing a better job than me.
Very grateful.
Right. Well, thank you very much. Thank you, John.
No, it's our pleasure, Stephen. We've seen a great personification of collaboration in this with Webfleet providing you with the data and the insights, the camera footage and all of that sort of stuff to really improve your business and make quality decisions. And those quality decisions are now really coming through in savings in maintenance, savings in insurance, savings in driver retention and driver well-being, and ultimately just doing something better in the industry that you love and have built a business within. And I think, you've articulated exceptionally well the real life benefits of moving to electric, whilst also not ignoring the difficulties and the head in hand moments, because they will come. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been super exciting to listen to a quality van business. We love vans. Really going for it. That's great.
Well,
thank you very much. And obviously, nobody will believe a word we said because I mentioned the Smash advert, and they'll think, "Well, this is not. At least it can't be scripted, can it? Nobody will.
It definitely can't be scripted. No, that's come
comedy
from dark recesses.
That's great. Well, good to meet you all, and thank you very much for your time and for your nice words, kind words. Thank you. Cheers.
It's been our pleasure, Paul. Stephen. And everybody, listen,
you,
feel
John.
Free to follow on with Top Speed Careers. Get over to their website. All of the details will be in the podcast notes. If you want to listen to other podcasts just like this one, obviously you can head over to the website, evcafe.org, or follow us on YouTube. That's a good place to do it because we've got them all there for your delectation at another time. Have a wonderful day, everybody, and join me in thanking Stephen and John for your company today on this brilliant, brilliant session.